Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast, bringing together two friends with stories that need sharing. Join us, Jodie and Nicole, as we navigate life after loss, discussing topics around birth, trauma, and baby loss, and providing a safe space for others to share their stories. Hello everybody, welcome back to Look to the Moon podcast. So this is episode 3 and we're going to be on part 2 of Jodie's story. So hopefully you've all listened to part 1 of Jodie and her daughter's story. If not, before you listen to this, go back and listen to that one. Yep. So it all makes sense.
Switch off and load episode 2 up.
Yeah. So this part 2, we're going to look more at the feelings and emotions attached to your story, Jodie, and just explore that a little bit and how you felt at the time and how you feel now. Maybe go into some coping mechanisms if you've had any to help with our listeners and share experiences between ourselves. So I think, firstly, let's talk about how you found, you and your husband both found being first-time parents in general.
Mm-hmm. I found it really tough.
Yeah.
My husband has surprised me in a sense where in our relationship, he is sort of the more reserved one, the more cautious one. And I am more of the driver, yeah. the more risk taker and the more confident and maybe outgoing one. And I feel that he's settled into being a parent really easily, which I'm glad.
Yeah.
And the change in him is so wonderful to watch. Because he's completely besotted and my daughter is definitely a daddy's girl. And I probably couldn't really tell you how the whole process has impacted him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't necessarily share how he feels. So maybe it's something that I could ask him, that if he would share a little bit and we could talk about it maybe on another episode. But I know that I found it difficult and I can't separate what happened to us to how I feel. Is that because I'm a new parent and becoming a parent is very tough, which I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a given that becoming a new parent is hard. But am I finding it more tough because of the trauma that we went through when she was born? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're not sure if that is because of the trauma that you went through or whether that would have just been the case if you'd had a normal. Well, I don't know if that's the right word to use.
Well,
you know what I mean.
Straightforward.
Yeah, straightforward. That's the one, thanks. Yeah. A straightforward pregnancy, really, for yourself and delivery. So with that, I know you're saying you struggled. Did you struggle to have a connection with your daughter because you didn't have the chance to have skin-to-skin contact with her and that first, you know, as soon as they're delivered, you hold your baby, you see your baby and...
Yeah, and that's been really hard to deal with because, as I've mentioned in, I think, both episodes that we've done previous to this one, that we're only going to have one child. And we were quite set on one child, but then obviously this experience has sort of cemented that we're pretty sure that we're not going to have any more children. So I feel that I've been robbed of some of those experiences, which is really, really difficult. Like, you know, in the ideal scenario, you know, you give birth and the baby, you hear your baby cry, that baby's laid on your chest, you know, you have that instant bond and you have the ability to try breastfeeding, which is something I wanted to do, and all of that was taken away.
Yeah.
And it feels like that I've been robbed of it, like someone has stolen it.
It's like all the firsts, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and what makes it even sadder is because we're not having another child, I'll never experience it.
Yeah.
And I remember someone saying, you know, are you really, really set on only having one? And, you know, you say that you've missed out on all of these experiences, but that's not enough of a reason to have another child, of course, you know. But I do feel very, very sad that I'm never going to have those experiences. That we're going, why it's been tough just recently is that my daughter's 17 months old now, mm-hmm. and she's obviously more hyper aware of her surroundings, who people are, you know, she's got relationships with people like grandparents and friends, and it's quite difficult sometimes when she just wants her daddy, which she does quite a lot. She's a daddy's girl, and I love the fact that, you know, they've got such a close bond. But it feels sometimes, and it might just be my brain that interprets it this way, that she doesn't have that bond with me, and I take it quite personally. And I know people say, don't take it personally, you know, it happens. Like, kids go through phases, but I find recently that it's not a phase.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be getting any better. That on average, she will always want her dad over me. And I'm thinking, is that because we didn't bond properly when we were born? And I remember feeling quite detached from... not necessarily from her, but from the whole situation. Like, I think I was in shock. Like, I remember being sat at her bedside of less than 24 hours after she was born, thinking, I just can't believe what's going on.
Mm.
You know, and I can't... Is she mine?
Mm.
Like, you know, I've seen her... She doesn't look like the same baby that I saw at the other hospital very, very briefly.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at her and going, how do I know she's mine? Like, yeah, I don't recognise her. Yeah. I've not seen her. I've not touched her. I've not smelt her. And, you know, it's been really, really tough to get over the fact that I will never have those experiences.
Mm. Yeah, no, I understand that. Thank you for sharing how you felt. Mm. Again, in the first few weeks... of bringing the little one home and being parents, obviously, like we've said, it's tough being a parent anyway.
Mm.
Like, those first few weeks, you're sleep deprived, you're like, what on earth is this? Like, what do I do with this baby?
Yeah.
did you recognise any of that at the time? Or do you think you just kind of go into survival mode and... do what you have to do with a newborn baby? Did you recognise any of these?
Yeah, I think, well, your instinct does kick in, but I think my instinct wasn't able to kick in straight away, because we were in hospital for a couple of weeks before we got discharged. So, you know, I packed for maybe a minimum of a couple of days away, and I didn't see my house for well over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I didn't go home. And those first 2 weeks aren't traditional when you're in hospital. You'll know this, and we're going to discuss journeys as sort of a neonatal parent in another episode, because you've been through that, I've been through that, and it's an experience in itself. But it's weird because you sort of leave your baby in a room to be cared for by somebody else, but you can be there as long as you like.
Yeah.
But also, you've got to sleep and you've got to eat.
And get
some rest. And it's bizarre because we, luckily, the hospital that we were in gave us a room on the top floor of their hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant we could be close by. But that was very strange, sort of. It felt like doing a day's work. And you were there. You know, you're on edge, you're stressed. You know, everything's a little bit of a blur. And then you sort of check out at a certain time, go up to your room, look after yourself, and then start the day all over again. But you've just had a baby, and your baby should be with you.
Yeah.
And I remember going up into the room and having to set an alarm to pump.
Yeah.
And I remember, I know you know this feeling, because you had to do exactly the same thing. And it was not conducive to pumping.
No.
Because your baby's not there.
No.
And you've gone through all the stress.
All the hormones of breastfeeding are attached to your baby, aren't they?
Yeah.
And when your baby's not there, your milk doesn't flow.
No. And, you know, I've always been a fairly relaxed, well, I say parent, but even before I was a parent and maybe I was pregnant, I was always a person that was fed his best. Mm-hmm. You know, I always wanted to breastfeed because I wanted to try it. I wanted the experience. But I was one of those that if it wouldn't work, yeah. I was happy to go on to formula or do whatever I needed to do mm-hmm. to feed the baby. But I didn't get the opportunity to breastfeed, especially obviously in the first instant, because I couldn't be with her. You know, I couldn't even touch her. She had no skin to skin. It was day 4 of her being born that I could actually hold her for the first time. And that was more difficult because she was still connected to all of the machinery and the wires. Yeah. And so our first couple of weeks weren't traditional at all.
Very detached, really, weren't they?
Yeah, very, very detached. Not, like you say, your mothering instinct or even your parental instincts from a, like, you know, from a father's perspective, it can't kick in.
No.
Because ultimately you are not caring for your baby yourself. You know, there's a professional that is there 24 hours a day. You know, when you're can't be there because you're asleep or whatever it may be, you know, they're the ones that are feeding your baby and changing your baby, and you know, the baby can't move with you. Mm-hmm. And that was always quite difficult, and it bizarre is probably the right word. Yeah. You've got this sort of ideal image or picture in your head of when you have a baby.
Yeah, you imagine how it's going to be, don't you?
Yeah, and you just think, this is crazy that, you know, 3 or 4 days ago when you were still pregnant, I couldn't have predicted that I've been through a traumatic labour, a traumatic birth. My baby's now in critical condition at a different hospital than we delivered. I've not been home. You know, I can't touch her, can't do anything to her. And you sort of detach yourself as a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think because if I would have delved into that, I probably wouldn't have coped.
No.
So the way my brain, I didn't do this consciously.
No.
I think my brain just naturally.
Just go on that autopilot, don't you?
And I think that's what happened.
Yeah. And did you find that you tended to put your daughter first before yourself? Like, because obviously you'd been through a C-section is major abdominal surgery anyway, and yours was, I don't know how many times worse than that. It sounds horrific, very traumatic. Like you say, you couldn't walk independently. You're in a wheelchair for 10 days. You're in a lot of pain. Obviously, you've got to recover yourself. But did you put your daughter first? Because I know from my experience, that's what you do. Like, it's a motherly instinct. Your baby, daughter, son is the priority, and you don't necessarily tend to look after yourself.
No, and I've never been sort of like that. Anyway, you know, I've always been fairly relaxed, and you know, what will be, and then when she was born, in the first instant, I was like, no, you go with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry about me. I don't care about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And really, my husband got the worst end of the stick because
having to choose between you.
Yeah, and he was worrying about two people. Mm-hmm. He was worrying about me and my condition, and he was worrying about his, you know, his new daughter. And I wasn't worried about myself at all.
No.
It never even crossed my mind. I remember thinking in the sort of the 2 weeks we were at that hospital that, you know, it probably did. I probably did feel sorry for myself you know, at different points in time where I'm thinking, I can't believe this is happening, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's not selfish because it's a natural thing, you know, I just want, why can't everything be normal, you know, and I was upset that it hadn't gone that way. But from a physical perspective, I didn't really care, you know. I did have a traumatic surgery, and again, I think, although physically I went through it, my husband got the worst deal because I wasn't bothered. Although I was in a lot of pain, he stepped up massively and you know, he was taking me to the toilet, and, you know, I couldn't toilet independently, and I couldn't shower independently, and I couldn't get up, and but this, again, everyone who has a C-section will understand this, but mine was prolonged, so a lot of people who have a C-section, especially if it's a scheduled C-section, it is less, I've heard just from speaking to different people with different experiences, it is less traumatic. You know, I've got a friend that had a scheduled C-section because her son was breech, so there was no way he was coming out bottom first, and she told me, you know, she had it booked in, there was no labour, which then which sounds amazing when I had a 3-day labour, and you know, it was all really relaxed, and she had music playing, and you know, it was like some sort of zen,
like absolute and, dream labour.
And I'm like, oh yeah, that's not what happened with me. And she said, you know, I was up walking, you know, probably 6 hours later, 7 or 8 hours later, something like that, and although she struggled to sleep afterwards, like, she felt like she had, like, a really, really good experience, but, you know, not being able to physically do anything for yourself was quite hard. You know, I've always, even after I got married, I've been quite independent and quite self-sufficient and never really relied on anyone for help before, so that was a big thing, is that I didn't have a choice, it was totally out of my control, which is something I don't like, being out of control,
as we know,
being a closet control freak, and having your husband have to take you to the toilet for many, many days, some having to help you shower and dress, and you know, I was wearing these god awful adult nappies, they were like pull up pants for adults, and I wore them, not joking, I wore them for a month, probably longer, because I, again, my recovery was hard, I bled for nearly 3 months post surgery. And he's pulling up my nappies, and I'm thinking, you know what? This man is just amazing.
Yeah.
Because, and there was no hesitation in it.
No.
None. It was like he couldn't father our daughter because of where she was. So he had to take care of me.
He put everything into you.
Yeah. He put his care and his energy into looking after me, and you know, he wheeled me around that hospital, he took me to the toilet, he got me dressed, you know, he was even, it was, we had a bit of a laugh in the hospital where we needed some help putting these stupid compression socks on that you've got to wear that are god awful, and they were like, yeah, you've got to do this and you've got to do that, and we asked for some help from a nurse who was starting to read the instructions on the back of the packet. So my husband was like, I can do it better than this.
Yeah,
so
it's he a worry, would, isn't it?
Yeah, and he ended up being my compression sock putter on her, as a better word. And so there's things like that, all these little things that, you know, he was doing. And so he was there for me and also, you know, caring for me, but, you know, he was worried about our daughter as well. Yeah. So the impact on him must be massive, you know, from an emotional perspective. But the start we had was not traditional.
No.
And it made it even worse because we were... I thought it was quite strange that even though we'd been through what we had and we hadn't even been home, or we were on our way home, should I say, we knew that we were going to be discharged fairly soon at this point, and we had family members that were like, oh, as soon as you get home, can we come round? And I know every single parent comments on the fact that as soon as you have a baby, the biggest thing you've got to deal with is people coming round to your house, and it's difficult because you just want to settle into a routine, and you know, and I'm thinking, we were getting messages off people that we barely even knew, you know, who knew what we were going through. And it really upset me that we hadn't had the opportunity to share the fact that our daughter had been born.
Yeah.
And people already knew that she'd been born and what we'd went through. That was really tough.
Yeah.
And social media plays a big part in that, because we're, as a family, we've never been big social media people anyway. But we'd made the decision not to say anything at that stage while we were still in hospital. Even though we had people asking, like, if the baby had been born. And again, you'll know this, you know, when people know you're pregnant, it's inevitable that people are going
to
say,
well... It comes to an end at some point.
It comes to an end at some point, yeah, whatever point that may be. And I remember someone shared a picture of her on social media. This is after we'd come home, and we hadn't shared a picture of her at this point. We'd announced that she'd arrived.
Yeah.
Not announced under the circumstance. We just said she's had a difficult time, but we're home now, you know, and sort of for all the people that are asking, really. It wasn't really for us. It was really for everybody else. But
it's easier sometimes just to do it in one message.
One big hit. Yeah, one big hit.
Rather than doing hundreds.
Yeah, and this picture was shared, and we hadn't shared a picture of her. And it so upset me.
Mm.
And looking back now, it wasn't a massive deal.
No.
But it felt massive at that point.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, I've barely had an opportunity myself to enjoy. Yeah. I've not enjoyed any of it at this point. And I don't want to share her.
No.
She felt She's too precious to share. And I just thought, you know, every Tom, Dick and Harry on Facebook, you know, because you've got people on Facebook that, you know, they're only wanting to be nosy about your life. And I'm thinking, I hate finding out things intimately about people or personally about people on social media.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing worse. And I didn't like the fact that she was shared with the world because we'd not even had her.
Yeah.
That was what it felt like. So all of these, and I never thought I'd be that kind of person that to get upset about a social media post, but I was.
Yeah.
And it just shows you how different your emotions are once you've gone through something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So with all that being said then, how has it had an impact on your mental health? Did it hit you in the initial stages of bringing your daughter home, or did you just go into autopilot, I've got to bring a baby up, get on with it, and then it's hit you later on?
Yeah, I think I've only just started dealing with the trauma of what happened now.
Yeah.
I think we were in hospital for a couple of weeks, came home, and then Bonnie had a complication that mean we had to go back into hospital for about a week. So in the first month of her life, we'd spent more time in hospital than we had at home. And then you've got the normal pressures of becoming a parent, you know, people wanting to come round, you're finding a routine. We've always been quite lucky, looking back over the course of the last 17 months, that we've been quite good at getting into a routine. So we've been fairly lucky with her that, you know, she's sort of settled into sleep and feeding and things like that. So there's not been any major struggles in that sense. But I think after she was born, your story plays a part in my story as well, and then probably vice versa as well. That only a short time after my daughter was born, your daughter was born.
Yeah.
And I remember totally disregarding what we'd been through.
Yeah.
And focusing my energy on what you were going through.
Yeah.
And you've already said in, you know, the first episode that you lost your daughter, which was, it's probably one of the worst things that can happen to anybody. And the expansion of what happened to you, you know, we were grieving for you as well. And which, when you've got a best friend that's going through something like that, it also, you like I say, you grieve for them and you grieve with them, and we certainly did. And I think for myself and my husband, when you and your partner were going through that and still are, because we just had our baby, we could put ourselves in your shoes, which was tough. And after your daughter was born, we were given some news about a close friend of ours that he had terminal cancer, and I think it was about 4 weeks. It all seemed to come in 4 weeks increments, that Bonnie was born, 4 weeks later you went into labour.
Yeah.
4 weeks after that, I heard about a friend who had got terminal cancer, who had only been given 8 weeks to live, and he only survived three. So 3 weeks after that, you know, we were at his funeral, and then at Christmas time, you know, I lost another friend who was in her 30s and who had two small children. So it seems like the trauma that we went through when my daughter was born, it sort of got put on a back shelf and not forgotten about, but other things preceded that that you had to sort of emotionally deal with. Which I think has delayed my reaction to the trauma that we experienced when she was born last year. It started to manifest now I've gone back to work. Because I came off my maternity leave, and I actually went to a new job. So I handed my notice in during my maternity leave and went to work for actually one of my existing clients. They offered me a job, and I made the move after nearly 10 years at my previous employer. And so not only had we gone through a very, very tough year with a lot of grief and loss, I then went back to work. My daughter went to nursery. And it was a whole new balancing routine. And my job is, I would say, stressful, but it's not stress that I can't handle. You know, most people's jobs are stressful. They have some element of stress. And some people have said to me, which is quite frustrating, is, oh, maybe you should not come back to work. And I'm like, well, work's a part of my identity. And I'm actually good at what I do, and I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy my job, and not a lot of people can say that. And it wasn't going back to work that's made me not cope. It's just another thing that we have to worry about, because going back to work and then the baby going to nursery all brings up new challenges when the nursery's calling you every 3 minutes saying they're poorly, and you're having to leave work, or your husband's having to leave work, and you're having to find childcare, and, you know, and it's, these are all natural things that...
It's a hard balance, isn't it? Being a working parent, it's bloody hard.
And to be honest, you know, being a stay-at-home parent, I've never appreciated what a stay-at-home parent has to go through until you become a parent, of course. You know, because I struggled on my maternity leave, because I'm quite a social person, I would say. But not so much anymore. Like, when she was born, and my husband had a good chunk of time off, because with everything that happened, he got signed off. And then he had his paternity. So he had a good 8 weeks off from when she was born. So really, with the first 4 weeks being in and out of hospital, he had about 4 weeks at home with us. So he had a good chunk of time off. And so he had about 4 weeks off with us before he went back to work. And it was when he went back to work that I started to struggle, because he obviously was there day and night, and it wasn't me on my own. And again, most new parents go through this, that even if it's the dad that stays at home and the mum goes back to work, yeah, that one parent that has that leave with your child, you know, you then become quite isolated. And at the time, my friendship group, nobody else was on maternity leave, you know, yeah, everyone was working. And, you know, I was encouraged to go to baby groups, but it's the one thing I felt like I didn't want to do. Yeah. And I don't know why. I just don't know whether, you know, I wanted to take her out, but then I also was quite isolated and alone. And, you know, I did struggle emotionally when, you know, she was having a bad day or yeah, whatever. And I just think I should be able to cope with this. You know, I'm quite a tough person.
Yeah.
That's what I kept telling myself. It's like, you're tough, you know, you can deal with this. But, and then I was like, no, but I'm not coping.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but it was obviously my mental health was suffering.
Yeah.
The things I used to be able to cope with, or the level of stress that I used to be able to cope with, is not the same anymore. And now it's been magnified. Now I'm dealing with nursery, I'm dealing with going back to work, you know, working full time. You know, I also freelance as well, which probably I shouldn't do. So it's, and I think I've explained it to you in this way, is that it's like before I had my daughter, I had like a suitcase to carry.
Yeah.
And the suitcase was heavy, but it was pretty easy to carry, and, you know, it was fine. And then my daughter came along, and then this other baggage I had to carry. Mm-hmm. And then now I've gone back to work, it's like the baggage is getting too heavy.
Yeah.
And I can't always carry it, and I'm struggling under the weight of it. Mm-hmm. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, like something's got to give.
And I don't know what to give.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
everything I'm going and doing, it's got to be done.
Yeah.
But it's finding an outlet, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think realising that you've got to look after yourself is, you know, like we said before, when you become like a parent, yourself gets put on the back burner. Like, you do everything for your child and your family, and you don't necessarily really think of yourself. But actually, like, that's really important. Like, you do have to put yourself first sometimes, and you do have to sit and think, like, why am I having a bad day? And, like, trying to get to the bottom of it. And, like, obviously me and you have spoken personally away from this podcast, which is actually the start of the podcast, which is why we're doing this. But
oh, the amount of content we could have had.
Oh, God, it's so been hours. Many conversations, I know. But, yeah, so I think it's recognising it. So maybe, you know, last year, like you say, when your daughter was born, traumatic, new parent, plus multiple other things that you've had to deal with and face. So you've not really had the time to deal with one or the other, because it's just one thing after another. Yeah. And you've definitely not had time to think of yourself.
Yeah.
So now, this year, there's a bit of let up and there's a bit of ease. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thankfully, touch wood, your daughter, she's beautiful and she's...
Cheeky,
yeah.
and loves Nicole.
Yeah, I know, yeah, she is actually. Like, so far, so good. Like, she is reaching all the milestones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, obviously, I know you and your husband are so grateful for. Mm-hmm. That you're now able to think, like, shit, I've had a really shit year.
Yeah.
And you actually sit there and think about what you've been through.
Yeah.
And how on earth you've coped.
Yeah.
And you
make a mental list
you
as do, well.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
You think, oh, yeah, I've been through that, and then been through that, and then been through that, and then... this is still ongoing, and I've still got to deal with this. And,
yeah.
You know, and I was saying that becoming a parent is hard enough as it is,
mm-hmm.
but then we're, like, you know, we've just come back from the hospital to deal with, you know, Bonnie went to have another MRI on her brain.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I shouldn't be here.
No.
I shouldn't be here where my baby has got to come back to the children's ward, she's got to be admitted, she's got to have a myriad of tests, then she's got to be put to sleep, to have a brain scan, to see what sort of brain damage is still happening in that little head of hers. And I'm thinking, that is so sad that she's here and she's having to go through this, and through no fault of her own. Mm. And I know this sounds completely odd, but it's where your mind goes, and your mind starts getting quite petty. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I remember my husband complaining at the price of a toastie at the hospital. Mm. And I thought, and I know this sounds really stupid, but it's in the moment, these are the types of things that go through your mind. You know, and we had to pay to park at the hospital. We were there all day, so we had to get something to eat. It turned out to be a really expensive day.
Yeah.
Going to the hospital for something that we shouldn't have to be there for. And I'm thinking, again, that hospital has no idea that nearly 18 months on, that the impact of their inaction, should I say, you know, resulted in all of this additional treatment, this additional monitoring, the outlay, you know, the number of appointments we've had to drive through, the number of days off work we've had to have. And I also put myself in the position of maybe another parent that's got, you know, a severely sick child, maybe, you know, and they're spending their lives at these hospitals, and I shouldn't complain. No. And then I flip from the other side going, I shouldn't complain, because there's some people that are far worse off than me. And then I think, well, no, because, you know, what you have to deal with yourself, you look at your own life, you and you do have to find ways to cope. But I know that's really petty.
I mean, they are expensive.
They are.
It's ridiculous.
I was like, I could get like a 3-course meal at a restaurant from this. And we're sitting in having crappy hospital food. Yeah. He comes back from the canteen going, the guy at the shop tried to push me a meal deal because the toasties were so expensive. And I think, what's our life become that we're talking about? Yeah, that we're arguing over the price of a toastie at the hospital.
Yeah.
But, you know, I sat there and she's asleep in this massive MRI machine and she's just looks so teeny. And in that moment, it makes me angry, you know, about the whole situation. And I think the hard thing is that you go through a roller coaster of emotions because you feel sad, you feel angry, you feel out of control, upset, emotional, and you go through phases of different emotions. And when she was at the hospital having this brain scan, it was definitely undertones of anger because she shouldn't have been there.
I was just going to ask you about what emotions you've felt or feeling, and I think you've just said some of it, but
and like you say, it's like we've had the debriefs at the hospital and we've had interviews with the investigators, and you know, recalling all of the events, because we've had to do that multiple times. We've had to go through minute detail of the labour, the delivery, how it made us feel. And a lot of that emotion has been either anger or upset, you know, from when I recall how she looked and, you know, how I was looking at her when she was going through all this. And I'm thinking, you know, this tiny little baby shouldn't be going through all this.
Yeah.
Which then makes you sad and upset, but then you're angry. And like you say, you flip from one emotion to another, I find, in my experience. And the emotions have changed over time. Time doesn't heal.
No.
Time allows you to find new ways to cope, which we've again discussed, you know, because people don't, you know, you're not going to get over these kind of traumas or these kind of losses.
Yeah.
But you learn new ways to cope.
Yeah.
And it feels like my ways to cope is only just starting.
Yeah.
This podcast is one of the reasons that, you know, or one of the outlets, I would say, that I would need. Because we can discuss it, and, you know, people sharing their stories with us is also helpful. Because you don't want anyone to go through what you've been through.
No.
but you know that there's people out there that have.
Yeah.
And it's not nice, but it helps because they can relate.
I was just going to say, knowing that someone else feels how you do about a certain experience that you've gone through.
Yeah.
It does make you feel like a little bit less alone and that you're not as, I won't say, well, you know, I will say crazy, because it makes you feel crazy that you're feeling these things.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, God, should I be feeling like this? But actually, it's normal, and it's your body, brain's way of processing the trauma or the loss that you've been through. Yeah. So being able to share that with someone and actually thinking, oh, God, thank God, I'm not the only one that feels that way. Like, it just comforts you, doesn't it, I think?
I think so, and it's hard to admit, but I've felt myself checking out quite a lot, you know, when I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, and say if we're at home and me, my husband and my daughter are all here and maybe she's having a bad day or you know, I've had a bad day.
Yeah.
I find that I struggle to parent.
Yeah.
Which sounds wrong or selfish, but it's my body's natural response to if I'm struggling. I just shut my mind off.
Yeah, well, it's a coping mechanism, isn't it?
Yeah, and like I'll sit on my phone and I will absently just scroll through Instagram or Facebook or whatever it is, doesn't
just
matter what it is.
Just distracts your mind from that moment.
I disconnect from that particular moment in time because I feel like I can't process and I need a break. Because I've got to a point now in my life that now I've gone back to work, and this is probably why I'm struggling more now than I ever have, is that I've got no respite.
Yeah.
Like, I come home from work, you know, a parent with the help of a fantastic husband who's very hands-on, so I'm very lucky. But a parent, I go to bed and I do the same thing all over again. And then at weekends, it's constant. It's 24/7.
Family time.
Yeah, it's constant. And, you know, I do struggle sometimes in the moment where I feel like I want to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably makes me sound awful.
No.
You know, because I'm so grateful for the setup I do have. You know, my daughter is here. She is very cheeky and a very hard work, but she's actually a really good kid.
Yeah.
And my husband's great, and I should be grateful. And I struggle with that sometimes because I still think I shouldn't be finding it this hard, but I am.
Yeah.
And I do look at other people I know, whether it's acquaintances or some friends, and they seem to be taking it in their stride. And whether it's a complete fake and they're great actors and actresses or they actually have a brilliant time with parenting.
Well, like, I think you only see a very small part of other people's lives.
True.
So, you know, we will sit here and share our whole entire life with each other.
Yeah.
All probably the shit, too much detail sometimes. But that's what friends are for.
Yeah.
But you see that lady bloody running with a pram through the park and you think, Jesus.
Yeah.
She probably has a shit time at home and that's her way of cope. That's her coping mechanism.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go out for a run and look like a hot mama.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what is
I can barely walk up the stairs, let alone push a pram around the park.
You just never know what is going on in someone else's life.
Mm.
Like, you just don't know. From just seeing someone, or even with our friends, like, if we go out with the kids or whatever, and we see our other friend with their baby or each other with their children, and we're like, oh God, she's absolutely smashing this parent life.
Yeah, yeah.
They might get home and think, oh, take my kid, like, I need some time
out.
Need
a break.
You just don't see. What you do see is such a small piece of someone's life that you shouldn't. I think we're too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
I know I definitely am, and I know you are.
Yeah.
Like, you compare the comparing of how other people parent, but that's one thing I've definitely learned as being a parent is just don't listen to anyone.
No.
Don't listen to how anyone else does it, because the way that you do it is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I visited a friend recently, and it was very, very recently, and her son, she's the planned C-section.
Yes.
Quite a good experience.
Yeah, lovely
labour. And I've not seen her because she moved away. and she'll know who I'm talking about if she's listening.
No names mentioned.
I went to visit her because she moved down south because of her husband's job, and she was a work friend, but we got very, very close. And I was waddling at this point. I was very close to leaving on my maternity, so it was about 3 or 4 weeks before my daughter was born. And she announced to me that she was pregnant, and it was quite early on, but she told me before I left. And then her son turns one next month, and I'd not seen her because she moved away, but I was down south for work, so I went to visit her. And she was just glowing. Like, and I didn't say this to her. I should have done, but I will if she listens. It was, and I was jealous of her, because she looked like she was loving every single minute of being a mum.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't feel like that. I love my daughter and I love being her mum.
Yeah.
But I don't love every minute of being a mum.
But that's okay. And I remember, I don't know if you'll remember, but being at one of our other friends' baby showers,
mm-hmm.
and one of her friends that was there when, you know, you give your advice to the mum-to-be and all that, and she said...
Oh, she did.
Do you remember? Don't listen to people that say, enjoy every minute, because you're not going to.
Yeah.
You are not going to enjoy every minute. And that's okay. Like, you're allowed to not enjoy every minute. Yeah. You're allowed to not enjoy breastfeeding. You're allowed to... not enjoy being awake every bloody minute of the night and listening to that baby cry, because that's parenting. That is not all roses and bloody rainbows, is it? Yeah. Like, it's hard work.
And we've got a friend who struggled to conceive, who's got a little boy now.
Yeah.
Again, she'll know who
she is.
And sometimes I think that she doesn't want to complain because she struggles so massively with conception. And, you know, she was going down the IVF route, and hopefully we might get her on this podcast so she can share her story a little bit more. But she struggled massively for years, and she's ended up with this beautiful baby boy. And I sometimes feel like she doesn't complain.
Yeah.
Because she feels like she can't.
Yeah.
Because she should be grateful.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, sometimes I want to say to her, you know, if you're not finding it tough, brilliant. But if you ever are, please say, you know, because... You know, us especially, I always go, oh my God, that was awful. Or, you know, that's really tough.
Yeah. And,
you know, she doesn't say things like that, but I think she doesn't say things. She doesn't share those things because she'll think she'll be seen as ungrateful, you know, because she's wanted this baby for so long.
And now
she's
got here.
This baby.
She's
got she can't utter it. A word of angst against becoming a parent or what she's finding tough or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but she might, I know she's loving it.
Oh, absolutely.
But it looks like she makes it look easy.
She does.
And
she's that mum that's smashing it in the park.
Yeah, and running and around good with for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and looks fantastic, you know, straight after giving birth. But that's a big thing for me, is that I haven't loved every minute, and I feel like I can't say that.
No.
Because people will judge me.
Yeah. Well, there's no judgments here.
No,
on this
I hope
podcast.
Not.
Well, yeah, just don't say it if you do. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Don't share if you're judgy.
No. Well, I think we've covered a lot there.
I think so. More things will come up in other episodes,
absolutely,
I'm sure.
Yeah. But thank you again for sharing your story of you and your beautiful daughter.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about her cheekiness and growing up.
Oh, yeah, and learning to parent and all of that.
But you learn every day, don't we, as parents? So you'll like, we never know everything, and we learn off each other.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening, if you're still there with us.
Yeah, and next episode we will be... Nicole will be sharing her story, and that'll be a two-parter as well, very similar to my story, in the two-part sort of telling the story, and then part two will be sort of exploring the feelings and the sort of the post-loss trauma.
Yeah, coping mechanisms.
coping mechanisms, and you know, how we're dealing with those situations. But we would love to hear your stories. We're going to say this in every episode, so you can either contact us on Instagram at Look to the Moon Podcast, or you can email us at hello@looktothemoonpodcast.com. you know, you can share your stories. We're also looking for people who actually want to feature on the podcast as well. So if you feel strong or brave or open and confident enough to actually, you know, be interviewed, if you've got a story to share, please drop us an email or a DM on Instagram and we would love to hear from you. But I think that about wraps up episode number 3. So yeah, tune in next time to listen to Nicole's story. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.